Good morning and welcome. I'm Saqib Shaikh. I'm a software engineer in the Artificial Intelligence and Research Group. I'm also blind. And on Stack Overflow, my highest voted answer is, how can you code if you can't see? So I thought, OK, I'm going to show you that today. The answer, of course, is using Visual Studio. And I also happen to use a screen reader, which runs in the background and narrates what is happening on the screen. So I thought, OK, I'm going to show you how I code a simple program in Visual Studio. So that's speaking really fast and in a robotic voice. That's how I code, because I want to be as efficient as possible. So this is the challenge. Can you understand what it says? So okay, so, you know, file, new project. Now, what am I going to code? This is always a bit of a dilemma. So I thought, hello world is a bit boring. So let's do a talking hello world. So I need to add a reference to the speech library. So I'm going to add a reference. And let's add the using at the top. So using system. And just like for anyone else, it's reading me out the IntelliSense, so I don't have to do all that typing. So let's continue with this epic program. And let's press F5 and see if it can build.
Hello, world.
Yay! Now, I've been using Visual Studio since I was at high school and got it in the back of a book. And it's always been somewhat accessible. But there have always been these little challenges. You know, this little screen here or this little thing there's less than perfect. So a year ago, roughly, I got to sit down with the VS team, and I walked them through some of this. And I think they were, you know, they're stoked. They basically have renewed their accessibility efforts, which is so good news for someone like myself. And they've gone through systematically analyzing the user interface, identifying all the areas where there needed to be a few accessibility improvements. For example, making sure it works with high contrast, or that you can use it with the keyboard, or that the accessibility APIs are implemented. So they went through and they've done that. And we're starting to see the changes today, which is amazing for me. And I'm going to show you just some of those. Maybe the biggest pain point for me was using the debugger, like the locals window. It used to be not accessible, so I used to actually have to copy text out of the locals window into Notepad so that I could read what the variable value was. And that sucked. So let's make this program a bit bigger and then look at the debugging experience. So let's make this program so instead of saying hello world, it says whatever is on the command line. So if it's not on the command line, we'll still say. It does capitals in a higher pitch. That's why it sounds all funny. And let's see if that still works. No. I don't have builders normally.
Okay.
I know, we've got a new line in concert. There's a quote at the end. There you go, get rid of that. Yay!
Hello, world.
Yay, we're back in action. Okay, so now let's put a breakpoint here so we can try it with the command line arguments. So put a breakpoint there, run it again, and here we hit the breakpoint. So let's go into this debugger window, which was formerly inaccessible, and it's telling me args has length 0. Okay, that's what we expect. So let's just edit that. Edit value, and it's going to be a new string array. What should I say? So now I can even expand this, and it's treating it like a tree view, which it should, and it's, you know, I can go through all the elements of the array. And if we just continue. Cool. Cool. So this is just. With these things, often it's just the small changes which matter. For example, that locals window, one of the developers just went through and made sure that it implemented all the accessibility APIs. But it makes such a big difference to my productivity and the way that I code every day. So maybe if you work on any user interfaces, be they desktop, mobile, or web, then these small changes in your apps could make a real big difference to someone who uses your app slightly differently. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Saqib. That was awesome. You learn so much about your product when you watch people who, when you witness people who use it, actually use it. My name is Amanda Silver, and with me I have Tim Sneath, and today we're going to be talking about the future of Visual Studio. We know that this is an 8-hour-a-day product for you, so we really passionately fine-tune it so that you can get your job done quickly and enjoyably. Last year at Build, I also spoke about the future of Visual Studio. Today, the Visual Studio now stands for so much more than it did last year. The core of our vision is any developer, any app, any platform. So over the past few years in particular, we've really expanded the product family quite a bit to match that vision. Now we have an IDE for both Windows and Mac dev machines. How many of you guys are on the Mac? Awesome. We also have VS Code, which is a cross-platform lightweight code editor, which is streamlined for developing in web and cloud applications. And we're really proud of the rapid adoption that we've seen for VS Code. We now have 1.6 million monthly active users. And it's also been selected as one of InfoWorld's Technology of the Year awards. We also have developer services like Visual Studio Team Services and Mobile Center that complement the IDEs and editors to complete the full application lifecycle. Now, our talk today is mostly going to be about Visual Studio on Windows. But it's also about how the Visual Studio family of products really sing together. So let me tell you a little bit more about our focus areas for the next few years. We wanted to make sure that Visual Studio delivers best-in-class productivity, is faster than ever, supports any developer writing code against any platform, and is connected to you so that we can continue to innovate and accelerate your impact. With Visual Studio 2017, we've been working on a ton of new features to make you more successful and more capable. These are just some of them that you see behind us. And we've seen developers like you embrace it. Visual Studio 2017 was the fastest adopted version in Visual Studio history. Within 48 hours of the launch, we saw more than 520,000 installs, which is a 44% increase over the Visual Studio 2015 launch. and a 3x increase over the previous growth rate. So it's been adopted pretty quickly. We've had more than 1 million Xamarin downloads since the acquisition last spring, and that's more than 3x the acquisition rate when it was a kind of separate company. We have over 1,200 extensions for Visual Studio, which makes the community of users extremely productive. And most recently, we saw some of the Stack Overflow survey results, and the popularity of C# is on the rise again, up 3.2% on a very, very large base. And TypeScript is the fastest growing language on Stack Overflow. How many of you guys saw Anders's TypeScript talk yesterday? Awesome. That was a lot of fun to work on. And we've continued to have a rapid cadence of releases since we launched. Since the initial release in March, we've released 2 more times, and we have a preview of the next release out, which is what Saqib's demo was based on, and most of our demos will be based on today. Now, today we've got a preview build along with countless extensions and some patches and some features that have been turned off and some that are turned on and so on and so forth, just to make sure that the demo works properly. But the goal is to give you a sneak peek of where Visual Studio is heading. Now, these are really hot bits. The preview is available for you guys right now, but this is the first version of that preview. We will do a couple of more iterations of it before we actually promote it to the kind of release channel. And I hope you'll grant us a little bit of patience if there's something that doesn't work quite so perfectly today. That's kind of what you get in exchange for seeing stuff that's really hot off the presses. So now let's talk about some of the other things that we've kind of been focused on. One of the big questions we've been asking ourselves is, how can you catch issues much earlier in the development cycle before they get out of control? If the fundamental promise of DevOps is to lower cycle time, then one area where you'll get the most benefit is by speeding up the developer's inner loop. And we've really been focusing on that inside the Visual Studio IDE. This means moving testing closer to the developer, and we call this shifting left or shift left. Shifting left is about uncovering as many issues as possible as early as you can in the software development process so that you can decrease the cost of fixing them later and improve the quality of the shipped product. One big investment for Visual Studio 2017 are real-time experiences in the IDE, and I'll show you that in a few minutes. But as you write code in the editor, real-time features alert you to things like broken unit tests or violations as you type. So let's jump into this demo to make it real. All right. Need to go to screen 3. Windows, hello. Okay, so first of all, now we have this new installer. Now the idea behind this new installer was that you can actually see what workloads you have a dependency on or kind of select only the components that you need. As we added support for Android and iOS and data development tools, other things like that, Visual Studio started to get pretty large, and so we really needed to rethink the way that you acquired Visual Studio so that you really only selected only the things that you need for your development environment. Now, in the preview release, you can see that we've added the let's see, where is it? Data science and analytical applications as a new workload in the preview release. And one of the things that you'll notice as you install the preview release alongside the RTM release channel is that they will actually both show up in the new installer tool. You can also see that we have some things like container development tools, and I'll be using those a little bit later here. Now, one of the things that I want to show you guys is that we actually are experimenting with a new, hold on one second, let me just come up here. We're experimenting with a new launch experience. And if any of you guys see this on your preview installs, so how many of you guys have installed the preview already? All right, so this should be going out to a few of you. If any of you guys have this kind of screen on your preview install, please bring it up to me afterwards. I want to make sure that it's actually getting out there. I have some really nice USB, Visual Studio branded USB sticks that I'll give you if you can prove to me that you're seeing this screen. All right, so now let's go back. And let's go back to Visual Studio. So, one of the things that we've done is we've revamped the start page so that you can get in and get going really fast. What you can see here is that in addition to the recent projects, which is populated by my roaming settings based on the fact that I'm signed in, you can also see that I can open from Visual Studio Team Services, or with the GitHub extension, I can open directly from GitHub. And in this case, we're
you need to switch your screen.
Oh, are you guys not? Thank you very much. There you go. Can you see now? Yes, okay. So let's try that one more time. So one of the things that you see in the getting started, get the start page, is that you can get started from the recent projects that you have that roam with you based on your settings, given the fact that you're signed in. But you can also open a project from Visual Studio Team Services or from GitHub with the GitHub extension. Now, I'm going to be working on a .NET Core 1.1 project today that I already have open. And we can just go in and look at the picture tag helper here. And what I can do is go to live unit testing and just go ahead and start running the live unit tests. Now, this is just going to take a quick minute to complete. But what you can see is that we have, with live unit tests, a little glyph that tells us whether or not those unit tests are passing and which unit tests are actually running based on the code that I have here. Now, from here, what I can do is go ahead and select this and see all of the tests that are hitting that particular code. I can go ahead and select one of these, and I can even start to step into to debug the selected tests. Now, this is going to build it. And provided that I set my breakpoints earlier, I should be hitting this in just a second, as soon as it gets to debug mode. Great. So now we see we're in debug mode. Now, one of the things that we've added in Visual Studio 2017 is this run to click. Now, I said earlier that we really obsess over every single second that you spend in Visual Studio. And one of the things, we've always had the capability to set a breakpoint and to run to that breakpoint. But this is one of those little tiny enhancements that makes you so much more productive. So we can just go ahead and select this, and we will run to that location. And then I can look at the source tag, and I can look at what's expected, and I can see that I don't have them quite right. This is supposed to actually be using the source set. So now I can go back to my picture tag helper. Oops. And I can go ahead and change that back, and I should get that passing in just a second. Okay. So, next thing I'm going to show you is some of the, there you go. Now you see that it's actually passing the unit test. So now we've also been working a lot on adding a whole bunch of new refactorings to Visual Studio 2017. And we're not done. We're going to continue with every release, add new refactorings until we're all satisfied that the possibility of refactoring that are useful has been entirely exhausted. But we are very, very hard at work on that. So let's just go to the startup page here. Now, one of the ones that we've added is the ability to check for a null input. So I can add a null check here, for example. Another one I can do is to select this and convert to an interpolated string, right? So these are really great productivity enhancements I can't tell you how much time I spent trying to parse what the interpolated string should be versus what was so easy for me to type based on string plus, string plus, string plus. But this is super, super useful. All right, so let's just save that. And now let's go up here and I think we're going to be in the home controller tests. And is that where I'm supposed to be? There we are. So one of the things that we've added is also IntelliSense filtering. And you can see that we actually have statement completion such that we actually look for all of the substrings. And you can also see that we have all of these little glyphs below with all of the keyboard shortcuts so that you can kind of get there super, super quickly. All right. Now, the next thing I'm going to show you is our new Find All References dialog. Let's go back to the tag helper. And let's look at the tag helper output. Now, I could just bring this up by going Shift F12. Should be working, not working. Okay, we will go to Find All References. And I will just bring this out so that you can see this a little bit better. But you can see that we've completely redesigned our Find All References tab so that it's actually much easier to see all of the places where this picture tag helper is, or tag helper output is used. And I can use the arrow keys to actually navigate up and down to be able to get to all of those. All right. So how many of you guys are using editor config today? I said this was a futures talk. I'm going to talk about something that we've actually been working on with MSR. Now, I don't know that this is exactly how AI is going to appear in Visual Studio for the first time, but this is something that we're experimenting with. It might be by the time it gets to your boxes, it looks a little bit different, but let me show you something really quickly that we're experimenting with, and you guys can tell us if you think this is a useful tool. So I can go into Tools here, and this is going to infer the editor config from the project. So it's actually doing analysis based on all of the code in the project. And one of the things that we are experimenting with is looking at, hey, should it just be all the code in the project, all the code in your repo? Should it be other GitHub repos that you subscribe to? What's kind of the scope that we should be looking at here? Now, this is going to basically infer based on everything, all the code that it can see. It will infer all of the style edit rules that it would like to apply. And we're just going to save that here. And we will save it at the solution level. And because I didn't have, I made the edits before the demo prep, we're not seeing any of the things be applied, but we will just apply it. We're not seeing any diffs. But then I can go and go to the Solution Explorer and add that file here. Add existing item, add the editor config. And now you see that we have the editor config actually loaded in this solution. Now, I mentioned earlier that we have a lot of great extensions for Visual Studio. One of them is written by Mads Christensen, who's on our web tools team, for the editor config. So it's basically a language service for the editor config itself. So that's why you see light bulbs and colorization and other things like that. Now, I can bring this up. I can sort the properties in the section. We can see that we have a little squiggle here. Yes, this is prototype bits, so it didn't quite get it perfectly. But I can actually go ahead and just hit space, and we see that we have statement completion for the editor config here. Now, I can go down to the bottom, and I can add a C-sharp style, what is it, var for built-in types. And I can go ahead and say false, and I can say suggestion. And then I'm just going to save that, and I'm going to reopen the picture tag helper file and see if this works. Mm-hmm. And now you can see that I actually have a dot, dot, dot squiggle here that tells me that that I should be using an explicit type instead of a var. So this is super useful. If you think about new developers that are coming on board to your team, this actually allows them to kind of have a coding buddy as they code so that they don't end up piling up all of these things that you want to change at PR time, right? So we're just going to save this. I'm going to ignore it for the time being. And I can go ahead and start to get ready for the check-in. Now, one of the other things that we've been adding into Visual Studio is making it so that the developer loop, including the PR process, kind of gets integrated into the IDE. So as you can see here below, I actually have the notification for all of the changes that I've made. And I also see something for the build and code analysis results, which is actually taking the editor config and it's looking at all of the code that I have in my project and applying all of those rules there. So I can actually see as I'm preparing a check-in which rules that I might be violating. And I could go to view the issues. And this just comes up directly in the error list, so it's right naturally in the workflow that you use today. And I could look at it for the entire solution, or I could look at it for just the current document, for example, or just the changed documents. And then I can go back to the Team Explorer after fixing those up, and I can commit with confidence and commit them. Yes. Let's sync. And push. All right. So that is the code analysis extension that we have that is kind of a preview right now for the preview. all right. So next thing I'm going to show you guys is the new Docker capabilities. How many of you guys are using containers today? Awesome. So one of the things about containers, and I think this is going to be a big trend for developer experiences overall, is they really make the developer environment more consistent with the production environment, with the CI environment. I think that there's going to be a huge container revolution in terms of how we all do development going forward. And we're really only starting to hit this a little bit. But we can go ahead and let's just open up a new instance of Visual Studio, just so that I can show you a file new project and how you can get access to this. Now, this is the container tools. I could go to file new project and select an ASP.NET Core project. And if I choose a web application, you'll now see that the Create New Project dialog actually has the Enable Docker support right here. And with that, you can actually see that I can select a Windows Docker container or even a Linux Docker container. I'm using Windows in this case. I'm just going to cancel out of this. Now, some of you guys might think that's fantastic, but I already have a web application. Am I going to create a brand new web application just so that I can get Docker support? Oh, no. So let me go ahead and show you guys how this shows up for existing ASP.NET projects that you might have. I can go into the project here, and I can go to add, and I can go to Docker support. And obviously, I've already enabled this for this particular project, but what that does is it actually adds a Docker Compose file right here. And that basically allows me to define a Docker container and a deployment target. And then all I need to do is to set this as the startup project. And you can see that my debugger target actually changes from IIS directly into Docker. So then I just need to launch this. This is going to take a few seconds, so I'm going to kind of skip that for now. And I'm just given time, and I'm going to ask Tim to come up and talk about how my experience actually can work with him as another team member, but he's my team member who happens to be of the Mac persuasion.
Is that a persuasion?
All right, which that's seven?
All right, this is number right. Seven here, yeah. Yeah, so this is Visual Studio for the Mac. I'm sure a lot of you have seen it now. We have been working pretty hard on bringing the core features of Visual Studio from Windows to the Mac. This is a native Macintosh application, but we've built it from the ground up to leverage a lot of the code from Visual Studio for Windows. So behind the scenes, we've taken things like the Roslyn stack. We've brought various other components into Visual Studio for the Mac. This is a V1. We're continuing to innovate and invest on it. But you'll see us continuing to bring the code bases together and add more and more features, more project types, more solutions for VS for Mac. So you'll see, for example, here, this is the same project that Amanda's been working with here. This is the bike sharing app. And here I've got some TypeScript up and running here. And you'll see we've got all the usual things. We've got color coding. I can go ahead and start making changes here. If I can type, you'll see I get IntelliSense come up here. I can go ahead and look at something like this method here, and you'll see that I've got the ability to go and work with various different elements that are associated with it. I have the strong typing associated with it as well. Same's true for C Sharp, here's a test harness that I've got here. At the bottom here, you'll see that Docker Compose file. Now, we don't have Docker right now in the current beta release, but if you go to the alpha release, there's a series of channels for Visual Studio Community, and you can check out the Docker Compose capabilities. Those are just starting to come out now into the environment. So we've got all of these different pieces starting to come into place here. So I'm going to go ahead and just add some tests. I'm going to be the tester who is supporting my superior, Amanda, with some tests to make sure that the code is all working fine. So I've got a couple of unit tests here, and I'm just going to take these, and I'm going to put these into this environment here. Of course, the other thing that we've got here is we've got Visual Studio Code, and the two products work very closely together. You'll see that even having just pasted those in there, I've already got it appearing in Visual Studio Code as my test, because it's picked up that physical file has changed on disk. So again, just like with Visual Studio for Windows, I can alternate backwards and forwards between one and the other. So I'll save that change, and I'll go ahead and check in my unit tests. Let's say unit tests, make sure Amanda's code works. And we'll save that. And I'm going to sync that, and OK. And with a bit of luck, that will now go into the source code repo. So Amanda, you've got my unit tests.
Well, let's check it out. So thanks, Tim. So one of the things that we've also been working on is making sure that as you set up your development environment in a team environment, that you actually get notifications that your continuous integration has been kicked off, and even potentially continuous builds actually happen, and the deployment gets kicked off as well. So if you go to the tools extensions and updates, you'll see that we have the continuous delivery tools for Visual Studio. Ignore the fact that I actually have two instances of that installed right now, but this is the extension that you want to go get. Now, what happens with this is you'll see a new little glyph show up here. And what you can do here is you can configure this for continuous delivery. Now, with an Azure subscription, I can go ahead and select my subscription here, my internal subscription, and I can select that for SF Cluster 56 Compose and set up a password. And then that will actually set up a new continuous delivery pipeline. Now, to do the continuous delivery, this actually requires that I have a continuous integration pipeline as well. So what this does is it actually sets up your complete continuous integration pipeline in VSTS for you, and then ultimately deploys that out to Azure. So I've obviously already done this, but I'm going to just go ahead and go to my build definitions. And you can see that the build definition that was created in the bike sharing app can be found right here. And I can actually go ahead and look at the individual builds. I can look at all definitions, look at the bike sharing app. come on. And we can see the history of all of the builds that have been kicked off. And we can see that, you know, Stephanie on my team had kicked off a build as well. Now, one of the things that should happen in Visual Studio that doesn't appear to be happening right now, but it is early bits, is I would, as a build completes, I would actually get a little toast notification that will show up in Visual Studio so that I can see that a build got kicked off because Tim just did a check-in and that there are new tests available for me, so that as I write code for that home controller, I will actually get the advantage of testing against his new unit tests. So that's pretty cool. So the last thing that I want to show you is now we've done the build process, we've actually kicked off a continuous integration build, we've kicked off a continuous deployment, so it's actually deployed up into Azure. Now let's go into Azure and kind of take a look at that. And now this is really only enabled for a few projects at this point, so it's definitely hot bits and not yet available to everybody, but this is a futures talk, so this should be coming to you guys in a few weeks. But what you see here is another application, very similar to the one that I've been working on. It's another web application backed by microservices. And what you can see here is the application map in Azure. And I can go ahead and select the application map to get a closer look at kind of how it's being deployed here. Let's just reload this. And we can open the application map. Now you can see the layout of all of the application components here, and I'm just going to select the visitors web diag. And what you can see is that in production, it actually logs all of the errors that it encounters while it's running. And one of the things that we see here is that we have an exception that's being thrown in my component when there's a get that's being called. I can go ahead and select that index out of range exception, and I can actually go and open the debug snapshot. Now what this is doing is it's actually looking at the exception that's thrown in production without you having to do really anything other than add a small line of code in your application, and it actually collects the stack trace for that app. Now one of the things that's super cool here is you can actually download the snapshot, and then I can actually open that in Visual Studio. So let's go ahead and try that. Here's a snapshot that was collected from this project. And as it opens it, it's just analyzing it. And I can go ahead and select to, I see the same, all of the components here. I can name where the symbols are located. And I can start to actually step into a debuggable instance of that snapshot that it captured in production when that exception was thrown. So what you can see here is that an exception was thrown. That's the same index out of range exception that you saw before. And I can actually go to the locals and I can expand the visitor and get information about basically which visitor was actually hitting my site in that context. It's pretty cool, huh? So what you guys saw in that demo is how you can get started really, really quickly with projects that are stored in VSTS or GitHub or wherever your repo is, how you can code, do really quick editing and navigation and refactoring, how you can adhere to the style guidelines that your team kind of works on, how you can deploy it to a Docker container locally, how you can then kick off a continuous integration without having to define your own build definition, and then kick off a continuous deployment, get notifications when other people check in for that continuous integration, and even after it's been deployed to production, actually get some information about how your code is performing. So with that, let's jump back to the slides. All right. So you guys saw collaboration across the Visual Studio family, bringing containers everywhere, applying machine learning to productivity, and development as a team sport. We will go ahead a little bit. Some of the stuff that you guys saw, getting it into the zone much more quickly, live unit testing, 10 times more productive refactoring, debugging, including run to click, and so much more. Performance, I forgot to show you guys this, but one of the things that we've added is lightweight solution load, so that if you have a very large solution that has hundreds of projects, we will actually only load the project that you're working on and the dependencies for that project, and you can actually set that in the Visual Studio options. You can set it to be at a certain threshold, or you can even just say, hey, Visual Studio, you figure it out. You figure out when it's appropriate to do the lightweight solution load versus to load the entire solution. You saw deployment to Docker. You saw the shift left for CI and CD. You saw live unit testing. The new thing that's in the preview is that live unit testing now works against .NET Core. Visual Studio for Mac that Tim showed, and the cloud debugging capability. So with that, I think I showed you productivity. I'm going to ask Tim to come up and talk about how Visual Studio allows you to build tools for any app.
Awesome. Thank you, Amanda.
You need a slide?
Sure.
So you've heard a lot of different productivity features, right? We've been investing left, right, and center to try and improve just the general inner loop for you as a developer to handle the shift left so that you can bring in those CI/CD aspects earlier into the code that you're writing. We thought we'd move on and talk a little bit about where we're going with Visual Studio as we add more and more different platforms, add support for different capabilities. So one of the things that we're really trying to do, and you've probably seen some of this already, is we're adding additional workloads to Visual Studio. That workload screen that Amanda showed is the place where we're gradually adding and filling out Visual Studio's capabilities. There was a time way back when Visual Studio was really a C++ environment. Then we added .NET. We're gradually adding other things. In 15.2, we added support for Python. We've now got support for data science workloads. And we're continuing to make Visual Studio a more and more productive environment, no matter whether you're building for Windows, for iOS, or for Android, or even for Linux. We're also adding support for additional new languages. And you see some of them listed there with their logos. At the bottom, you can see in the small some of the other languages that we're adding lightweight language support for. And so we're using the TextMate bundle support to enable any language to be included and with Visual Studio and supported with IntelliSense and syntax highlighting, colorization, those kinds of things. And all you need to do is to go and grab a TextMate bundle and drop that into your VS folder, and we support those core capabilities for that language. And we've added out the box support for over 20 languages, of which these are some of them. So I want to show you a quick demo of some of the any language supports that we're building in here. And I'm going to flip over to my demo machine. And I've switched back to my true love, which is a Windows machine. but this is, you remember Terry yesterday talked about making Windows 10 the best developer machine available. We're really looking to do the same for Visual Studio, so that Visual Studio plus Windows is the best development environment. And in particular, one of the big things that we're adding a lot of support for is the Windows subsystem for Linux. So Terry mentioned this briefly yesterday, but Windows subsystem for Linux basically takes the entire Linux kernel, the environment for Linux, and brings it into Windows. So what you see here is I've got a bash window, a real bash window running on Windows. This is using it literally is bash. It's the ELF binaries. It's the traditional Linux environment. And I'm running this without any virtualization. What Windows is providing is a subsystem to provide the Linux syscalls and make them available within Windows, proxying them through to the underlying kernel. So we essentially take the Linux kernel interface and support it on the Windows kernel. And that means that I've got access to everything that Linux provides within my environment. So here, this is, as I say, a bash window. I can go ahead and look at my current directory. I can go ahead and do something like, let's look at the bin directory. You see there, those all the standard Linux utilities.
I've got access to the full tool chain. So if I go here and I'll run GCC whack whack version, you see that I've got, again, Ubuntu's compilation of the GCC tool chain. I've got Clang. And again, you see that I've got that same environment there. You see where it's installed to. I can even do things like if I install an X server, I can run Emacs. But not just Emacs, I can run Emacs in an X window. So I've got full, really impressive facilities for using Linux applications within my own environment. That's pretty cool, right? Another thing I can do, and we'll show this a little bit later on, but I can run these little things. Have you seen these Fortunes? These are pretty cool. This is one of the killer features of Linux that we really need to implement for Windows. So I can go ahead and run Fortune, and it'll give me a different sort of little message, something to give me a boost in the day. How much does it cost to ride the Unibus? 2 bits. Okay, I guess if you're... Okay, let's not go there. The other thing that Linux, of course, people do, it's a very textual interface, so I can take something like Fortune and pipe it to another of my favorite Linux commands, and that's cowsay. So if I take Fortune and pipe it into cowsay, it gives you a kind of little cow, and I can man cowsay, and there's a whole bunch of different commands you can have. It's really quite impressive. You see here, dash B initiates Borg mode, dash D causes the cow to appear dead. So I can go ahead and do Fortune cowsay minus D, and there we go. So the other thing we've done in Windows 10 Creator Update and beyond is we've added better terminal support for these different things. So that's kind of cool, but let's also add another of my favorite Linux command line utilities, and that's lolcat. And what lolcat does is it basically colorizes whatever comes out of the command line. And so in this case, I can take Fortune, pump it to cowsay, and then pipe it to lolcat. And because we now have 24-bit color support in the terminal, I can start doing some really cool things like that. Thank you. I can even use the dash A parameter to animate it so it kind of does cool stuff. But that's kind of by the by. All right, so that's Windows Subsystem for Linux, a really powerful environment for running Linux applications. But I'm going to go ahead and now do some development with Linux, with Visual Studio. So I'm going to sudo and start the SSH service so that I can talk backwards and forwards between my Linux environment and Visual Studio. And I've got here, this is Visual Studio, again, Visual Studio 15.3. Dash special private builds, but you can do essentially all of this stuff on the 15.3 build that is now public. And what I'm going to show you here, I've got two projects in this solution. I've got a .NET core, ASP.NET core site. And what the site does, it's just a front end. It lets me type in a command, and it passes it back to the Linux environment and then reports the results. So I'm going to just go ahead and run that, because then I don't have to worry about that component. And so I'll .NET run on that that area. Where's that gone? There we are. And if I go to here, this is my little client here. Hopefully that'll work fine for me. This is basically the place I can just go type some command, and I'm going to submit it. And when it submits it, it's going to poke that command through to an HTTP listener. And here is the HTTP listener. This is written with the Linux workload for C++ development that's part of Visual Studio. And so what you see here is I've got true Linux development going on here. I've got C++ code. You'll see here I've got some autos. I've got various different commands. Oops, I pressed the wrong button there. Let's go to the end and just do something like HTTP colon colon. You can see that I've got IntelliSense. And this isn't just any IntelliSense. This is IntelliSense coming from the Linux include files here. So I've got access to everything that I need there to start editing this code. And what this application actually does, it's pretty simple. All I'm doing is I've set up an HTTP listener for GET commands, and I take those GET commands, and when I receive something, I strip off just the last bit of it, and based off that, I go ahead and just literally echo it back. So I set the body with the results and then reply with that command. So let's go ahead and build it. But before I build it, I also just want to show you where this all happens. So if I go to the cross-platform section, where is it called? Not cross-platform. There we are, Connection Manager. There we are. You can see that what I've done is I've set up an SSH connection to my box. Last year, if you came to the Future of Visual Studio talk, you'll have seen that we did this to a VM, and we showed how you could start doing some basic Linux development with a VM. But now we're running this locally on the machine. So if I go ahead and I'll just go ahead and choose build here. And in the background, I'm just going to go back to my bash thing here, and I'm going to run top, which is kind of like task manager for Linux. It's contextual, of course. And you can see in the background here what's going on right at the top there. There was CC1 plus and then AS. And then LD, it's compiling this code on the Linux subsystem, and now it looks like it's completed. So now I can go ahead and run that code on the Linux side, and it'll fire off. And if I go back to top again, you should see there's my Echo service. This is the program that I've just compiled from Visual Studio on Linux with the Linux toolchain, all running locally without any virtualization on this box. So let's go and try this out. I'm going to just put in something here. We've done a lot of Hello Worlds. Let's think of something to write here. Linux on Windows is great. And we'll press submit. And there we go. So it's echoed it through. So my client has poked that through to Linux. Linux has done the work. It's sent back a reply. Thank you. But it gets better. Of course it gets better. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to set a breakpoint here on this side, and I'll put in something else, and we'll say debugging works too. And we'll hit submit here. And now, again, this is Linux, right? This is real Linux code that I've got running here. You see the breakpoint is hit. You'll see that I've got my locals window that's here, and that you can see that this is the command. I can go ahead and continue to step through this code here, and you see there's the C that's come up, and it's doing its usual thing. And I've got the call stack. And I can't go all the way down to it because there's some magic code underneath there, but I can go ahead and continue, and that works too. So again, pretty neat. Let's do one more thing. Thank you. So we thought, just for fun, and this really is just for fun, we're going to take that command, and just to prove that this is Linux and not some kind of faked up thing that I've got running here, instead of just echoing back the command, let's take whatever I get from my website, and we'll just run it on Linux. Because, I mean, what could go wrong, right? I mean, you can just type anything you like there. So cmd.execute the C command. And so we'll do that. We'll just restart the application. It'll warn me it's out of date. It'll rebuild it. So we'll go back to top, and hopefully we'll see this firing off the compiler again. And again, in Visual Studio, we have so many features that are going to start coming online over the courses of the coming months to enable this. We've got CMake, incremental CMake building. We've got support for the lightweight solution load. We've got support for all the includes and things like that. So now I should be running again. Let's go back to my site here, and let's do something simple like LSB release and see if that works. Fingers crossed. Oh, I've hit my breakpoint. Of course, I had a breakpoint. Let's close the breakpoint and continue. And there's my response there. I can go ahead and call fortune. Let's have some more fortunes. And then I'll go ahead and why don't we even just do fortune and cow say it? Because everybody needs a good cow say in their lives. I really think we might implement this into the build stack so that cow tells you everything that is going on. So there we go. Linux development, Visual Studio, C++, all working pretty smoothly together. Thank you. All right, so I'm going to switch gears a moment. Pause, reframe, tell you something slightly different. So that was Linux C++ development. Another workload that we've been putting a lot of work into has been this whole data science space. So there's two new workloads that we've added. There's the Python workload, and there's the purest data science workload. The Python one's pretty cool. It's got, because it's an IDE, we've got Python itself. We include various different Python runtimes. We've got the traditional CPython. We've got Anaconda, which includes a whole bunch of data science Python libraries. And then we've got the data science workload that includes both Python and R. R is awesome. I don't know if any of you guys have used R yet. It's becoming my favorite language. I can't. It doesn't have cow say, so it's not got everything, but it's pretty neat. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to switch into essentially Visual Studio data science mode. So I've gone to R Tools and changed my environment here. And I better close down this C project because it'll get a bit confusing otherwise. So what I'm doing here is I'm basically reconfiguring the entire window settings to work in an R mode. So if you're a traditional data scientist, one of the tools you may have been using up till now is something called RStudio. There's some very popular R environments. And the way that you use this as a much more imperative language is different. You know, you're interacting with data on a regular basis. And so that's what this provides for you here. So I'm going to just load up my R solution for a moment here. And I've got a couple of different windows here. In the top here, I've got my code itself. Below that, I've got an interactive R environment. So I can go here and I can start putting in variables. Let's say Tim, and I'll give myself number 3 as a variable. And you might see, I know it's a little bit small, but on the right-hand side here, you'll see there's a variable explorer, which shows you in real time the context that I'm working with in the R environment. And down here, you can see that I'm running against the Microsoft R client. So I can do some other cool things here. R comes with some data sets for testing and experimentation purposes. There's one called air quality. Oops, air quality. And I'll just put that into a variable. And there you see it here now appearing on the right-hand side. The thing that's really cool is because Visual Studio has all the power of everything else we've built over the last 20 years, as an R environment, you get so much stuff for free. So I've got this view here that I can see. I've got all the tool windows associated with it. So this is really is just a data set focused on air quality. You can see historical values of ozone and wind and temperature across a period of time. So I can go ahead and click on this button here, and I can see the values in my window over here. I can even go ahead, because this is real Windows, real Visual Studio, I can take these values and transport them straight into Excel. So I can go ahead and create pivot tables and things like that from there if I want to go ahead and do that. But let's show you a few more things that are a little bit more kind of exciting with R. So I'm going to go ahead and load a couple of different libraries. One of the best things about R as a language that sets it apart from other languages for data science is it has a huge array of different libraries of other functionality you can load in. So whether you're a biochemist or a financial stockbroker whiz, you can go ahead and load in these different libraries and quickly, with just a few lines of code, do some pretty neat things. So I'm going to start just by going up to the top of this, and I'm going to load two libraries. There's the QuantMod library, which does clever quant things. And there's the HiCharter library, which is a wrapper for the HiCharts JavaScript charting library. And so what I'm going to do, I'm crossing my fingers it's a good day for Microsoft here, because I'm getting the historical symbols for Microsoft as a stock. So that's been grabbed there. And you should now see on the right-hand side here, I've got my Microsoft variables here. These are all the stock prices coming in from Microsoft. And to chart that, it's one line of code. So here I'm just charting that as a series using the HiCharter environment. Sorry, in fact, this isn't the HiCharter. This is the QuantMod thing here. So I can see here's the Microsoft stock price. It's obviously because of Azure. So if you're not using Azure, go use Azure. You see how effective it is. It's growing in spades. And I can go ahead and manipulate this chart. In this case, I've just gone ahead and added volume information. I'm going to add these things, which are called Bollinger Bands. And I've no idea what they are, but they make my chart look cooler. So we'll add some of those as well. And so if I go and take that, oops, I shouldn't have dragged that there. Let's just dump that back down there and drag this tab out here. You can see, sometimes it just docks things in unusual places. There we go. So you can see a little bit more of the R environment there, and you can see that there's this chart here. Each of those charts that I've just gone ahead and created there are basically being stored in a plot history window. So I can easily move backwards and forwards between them and see the various different sort of pieces of data that I've just been working with. So there's the original one, and here's the one with the Bollinger Bands on it. So let's do something a little bit more sophisticated. I'm going to go ahead and add in some other stock symbols. Oops, let's set a start date. We'll add those in there. We'll start the investment. And in this case, all I'm just going to do is I'm going to show a really rich chart here. And this is now using the R charting environment to produce something that's really cool. So you can see here the different stock prices and see how they've grown and manipulate them. This is what R's good for. It's really good for this kind of deep manipulation of data. And with R in Visual Studio, we're starting to add support also for connecting to R servers. So I can connect into a Linux R environment and run that locally as well. So I can create a big 20-core Linux environment on Azure and then take that and poke it back to my R environment. So, showing you a bunch of different things there. We've shown you Linux with C++. We've shown you R and shown you how R becomes this really rich environment. We're going to flip back and just close out with a couple of slides now. And
that's great. It. Thanks, Tim.
Thank you.
That's great. So that's a little bit of the coverage of the brand spanking new functionality in Visual Studio. One of the most important ways that we know we're on the right track is by enabling new features and new functionality and fixing the bugs, maintaining the quality, is getting feedback directly from you. So make sure that if you have feedback for us, if you find a problem in the product or you want to add a suggestion, there's actually a little glyph at the top of the menu that you can select to provide us that kind of feedback. You could also even just tweet to @Visual Studio, and we read absolutely all of the feedback that comes in. Our team actually looks at every single piece of feedback that comes in. Let me show you something in this new release that actually makes providing feedback even a little bit easier. We've focused on improving the experience in the feedback tool over the past year so that you can find issues that other people have reported along with the trends for those issues that's specific to that particular build and that particular channel that you're using. And you can even see status on the issues that you've previously reported. So if you reported an issue, you'll actually be able to look at this and see what's the status of that. You'll get a notification if we've actually fixed the issue and have a new build available for you to try out. So please do check that out. One of the ways that this has really made our product get better much more quickly is we get a report. In this instance, we got a report the day after we shipped that we had bad performance in Visual Studio. Our engineering team engaged immediately. And we actually got a release out within just a few, we got an accepted workaround out within a few days and an updated fix out by April 5th. So we moved from reporting the problem in the tool to within 48 hours acknowledging that there is a workaround and actually making sure that the user was unblocked. So definitely do use that mechanism if you find issues in preview builds of Visual Studio. So we've shown you a little bit of the future of Visual Studio. We hope to make sure that Visual Studio continues to be the most productive tooling in the industry and that we embrace development as a team sport so that you can actually work in a team environment much more productively than you ever have before, that any developer, truly any developer, can build any application. And we always want to improve the product based on your feedback, so please do give us that feedback. We hope you enjoyed the session today, and go download the new preview bits and check it out and give us that feedback. Thank you very much.